going to start with the second verse. And then at the end of each verse, we'll say the chorus. Mm-hmm. See if I can do this. I tend to either sing too low or too high. So I'm going to try to sing too high instead of too low. And hopefully that way you'll be able to follow, I hope. Samsara, samsara, kore, mitche.
Do la ba ma. Oh,
rarest opportunity for attaining spiritual perfection. I am now lamenting bitterly. This is because somehow or other I have been born with such an opportunity, but have simply wasted it by never worshipping Lord Krishna. Oh, to whom shall I tell the tale of my misery? Having married and entered the entanglements of materialistic family life, I passed my time in vain. I never got any tangible gain or permanent benefit, but only trouble and botheration. What kind of world is this? It seems to be just like a magic lantern show, wherein so many shadows and optical illusions dance magically before my eyes. I feel great attachment and identification with such a world, and thus day after day passes without any purpose whatsoever. When this body drops dead on the ground, what will then remain mine? At that moment, all of my sons and dearest loved ones will not be able to give me any happiness. I work hard just like an ass every day, and now I am wondering, for whom am I working so hard? I am still surrounded by so many illusions. I waste every day in useless, insignificant work, and I waste every night controlled by sleep. And in every 24 hours, I never consider that cruel death is always sitting right in front of me. I imagine that I live a very carefree lifestyle, sometimes eating a lot, or eating a little if I feel like it. Sometimes I see nice things around the town, or sometimes I do not go out at all. Sometimes I wear opulent clothing, or if I'm in the mood, I'll wear something simple. I live so carefree that I never consider that one day I will have to give up this body. But in actuality, my poor heart is plagued by constant anxieties regarding the maintenance of my body, my house, my wife, my family members, and my social obligations. All these anxieties are pinching me sharply and truly destroying my intelligence. Alas, alas, what a remorseful situation has arisen. I am engrossed with all this trouble, but I never consider that all these things are temporary and subject to perish very soon. After I'm dead and gone, what will remain of all my material opulences? When my body is thrown into the pit at the cremation grounds, it will simply lie there motionless. Then many crows, vultures, ants, and worms will come and playfully sport there. All the stray dogs and jackals will become very much delighted, and in great ecstasy, they will make a festival ground out of my body and have a huge feast. Just see, such is the ultimate destination of this material body. And the most amazing thing is that all material opulences, my house, family, and friends, have exactly the same destination. Therefore, I advise those of you who have keen intelligence, please give up all these temporary illusions presented by Maya and search after the means to get pure devotion to Lord Krishna, for this is the only eternal truth. And we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 10, Battle Between the Demigods and Vritrasura. Text 10. This is the instructions of Dadichi when the demigods are asking for his body. And before we read the Sanskrit, actually, I'm going to just. The word parakai here, Prabhupada translates as which after death are eatable by dogs and jackals. So I'm going to read the English first and then we'll quote the Sanskrit. This body, which is eatable by jackals and dogs after death, does not actually do any good for me, the spirit soul. It is usable only for a short time. I may perish at any moment. The body and its possessions, its riches and relatives must all be engaged for the benefit of others, or else they will be sources of tribulation. Now you can see why I'm going to sing that song. Okay. And here we have, just like in Bhaktivinoda Thakura's song, he said, hi, hi. So here we have, aho, aho. Alas, alas. Aho dainyam aho kastam.
Aho dainyam aho kastam.
Parakai kshana bangurai. Yano pakuryara spartar. Archiswagnati Vigrahai. Aho Danyam Aho Kastam. Parakai Kshana Bhagurai. Yano Bakuryada Spartar. Archiswagnati Vigrahai.
Aho Danyam Aho Kastam.
things. If anybody wants to keep a copy, you can just take it on the way out. Where did you put it?
I put them on the back.
Okay, so they're back on the chair, and if you want to take a copy of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song on your way out for your own meditation, you can do that. And I want to thank Krishnananda for photocopying that. Aho!
Aho!
Alas!
Alas!
Danyam!
Danyam!
A miserable condition!
Miserable condition!
Aho!
Aho!
Alas!
Alas!
Custom! Simply tribulation.
Simply tribulation.
Padakai. Which after death are eatable by dogs and jackals.
Which after death are eatable by dogs and jackals.
Shana bangurai.
Perishable at any moment.
Yet. Because.
Because.
Na. Not.
Na.
Upakuryat.
Would help.
Aswa artai.
Not meant for self-interest.
Martyaha.
Martyaha.
A living entity destined to die.
Swa.
With his wealth.
With his wealth.
Nati.
Nati.
Relatives and friends.
Vigrahai.
Vigrahai. And his body.
Body.
Okay, so let's do a little meditation here. Let's look at our hand, all right? Not bad. Now just imagine we've left this body, okay, and the body's just lying there, and as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, it will just simply lie motionless. Then many crows, vultures, ants, and worms will come and playfully sport there. So just there's all these little ants and vultures and worms just picking at this hand. And we're just not even there anymore. Maybe we're kind of floating above just looking at this scene. All the stray dogs and jackals will become very delighted. Anandita, he says. Ananda, they will have great happiness. And in great ecstasy, they will make a festival. Mahotsava. Utsava means a festival or enthusiasm. Mahotsava, great festival. So the stray dogs and the jackals, just like here when you have extra prasadam. What do we do here at the farm with extra prasadam? The pookies. You just throw it out the door. Right? Isn't it? You're not supposed to. Oh, well. Don't report me. So you just throw it out the door, and how fast is it gone? Like that, right? They say, oh, Mahotsava! And they all come running, and they tell their friends. Actually, they try not to tell their friends so they can have it all for themselves. So when we leave this body, the body will be there, and the body will be there, and the dogs and the jackals will go, Mahotsava! Mahotsava! Translation in Bhopur Parishu. This body, which is eatable by jackals and dogs after death, does not actually do any good for me, the spirit soul. It is usable only for a short time and may perish at any moment. The body and its possessions, its riches and relatives, must all be engaged for the benefit of others, or else they will be sources of tribulation and misery. Purport. Similar advice is also given in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.22.35. Etavaj janma sapalyam dehinam iha dehishu pranar artar dia vacha shreya arachanam sada. So prana is, not prana das there, but prana is the
life air.
Arta is one's wealth. Dia is intelligence. And vacha is words. So one's life air, one's very life, one's wealth, one's intelligence, and one's words. It is the duty of every living entity to perform welfare activities for the benefit of others with his life, wealth, intelligence, and words. This is the mission of life. One's own body and the bodies of his friends and relatives, as well as one's own riches and everything else one has, should be engaged for the benefit of others. This is the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 941, Bharata Bhumite Harila Manasa Janmayara, Janma Sartaka Hari Kada Pada Upakara. One who has taken birth as a human being in the land of India, Bharata Varsha, should make his life successful and work for the benefit of all other people. The word Upakuryat, which we have here, no Pakuryat, is Na Upa. Na U becomes No. The word Upakuryat means Pada Upakara, helping others. Okay, so far we've established that. What's the destination of this body? jackals and worms and pukikos will have a mahotsava. And that's true, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says here. He says, just see, such is the ultimate destination of this material body, and the most amazing thing is that all material opulences, my house, family, and friends, all have exactly the same destination. So here we should engage our body and our wealth for the benefit of others, para upakara. So somebody may read that and say, okay, then I'll engage in sense gratification. If I meant to do para upakara, if I meant to do upakuryat, then I, what kind of work would I do? Charity work. Philanthropy. The word upakuryat means para upakara, helping others. Of course, in human society, there are many institutions to help others. So Prabhupada's saying, it's not only that the Hare Krishna devotees have figured this out, that in human society, many people engage in para upakara, or welfare work for others. But because philanthropists do not know how to help others, their propensity for philanthropy is ineffectual. They do not know the ultimate goal of life, shreya acharanam. So there, Prabhupada's quoting from the Bhagavatam verse from the 10th canto. Shreya acharanam. Shreya, there's prayas and shreyas. And the way I remember which is that prayas starts with a P, like playing. And Prabhupada often gives the analogy that children want to play. They don't want to go to school. They don't even want to take care of their health, right? The children are so busy playing that even if it's cold outside, they won't, isn't it? Right? And children? Come and put on a jumper. No, I just want to play. Even Krishna and Balaram were like that. They're out playing, and Mother Rohini comes and calls, come, Krishna and Balaram, come home and take your lunch. And they start to go, and the other coward boys, what do? We won't play with you anymore, Krishna. And so Krishna and Balaram get scared, and they go back to play. And Mother Rohini comes back and tells Yasoda, she said, I failed, they wouldn't come. And then Mother Yasoda goes and she says, Nanda Maharaj won't eat until you come home. He's fasting until you come home. You have to come home and eat. And anyway, look, all your friends have already eaten and bathed and been decorated in ornaments. And Krishna regretfully comes home. So this tendency is there also among human children, that they're interested in prayas, not shreyas. They're not, I don't want to study, I don't want to do my homework, I just want to play. They do not know the ultimate goal of life, shreya acharanam, which is to please the Supreme Lord. If all philanthropic and humanitarian activities were directed toward achieving the ultimate goal of life, to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they would all be perfect. So this is very much like what Srila Prabhupada talks about in the Ishupanishad, where he says that if you connect your philanthropic activities and your altruistic activities with Krishna, they become perfect. Humanitarian work without... Now, this is two very interesting sentences, and we're going to contrast this to something seemingly different that Srila Prabhupada says in another place. And one of the reasons that I like to point these things out is that sometimes you'll find devotees will say, well, we're going to take everything in the scripture and everything that Prabhupada says literally, absolutely. And I have two answers for that. First of all, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave how many explanations of the Atmarama verse? 61. So at least 61 literal meanings of each verse. Which one are you going to pick? And Prabhupada said that we should study the verses from so many angles of vision. And the other thing is that if you're going to take what appears to you to be the immediate, obvious, literal meaning, then you're going to have problems because there's going to be an immediate, obvious, literal meaning someplace else that may say something different. Therefore, understanding of the Shastra is not so simple. The Christians say, the devil quotes scripture, and Prabhupada would also refer to that. Right? That you can pick something out of the scripture, interpret it in a particular way to make almost any point that you like. Okay, so here's these two sentences. Humanitarian work without Krishna is nothing. Krishna must be brought to the center of all our activities, otherwise no activity will have value. So what value is Prabhupada giving here to ordinary philanthropic work?
None.
None. Zero. And of course, this reminds us of the last verse in the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Ashraya Hutam Datam Tapas Taptam Kritam Trayat Asad Ichuchate Parta Nachitakteshina. That without faith in the Supreme, everything is asat. It is no value in this life or in the next. All right, then we turn to Bhagavad Gita, chapter 12. Anybody know where I'm going? Where am I going? Okay, past that. And if you can't even work for me, Krishna says, just fix your mind upon me. Engage all your intelligence in me. If you can't do that, then do abhyas yoga, do sadhana bhakti, so that you'll get an icha, you get a desire to attain me. If you can't do that, abhyas ap, asamartho si, if you can't even do sadhana bhakti, then just work for me. And if you can't do that, if you can't even do any work for me, then what should you do?
Give up your fruits.
Give up your fruits, do charity. If, however, you are unable to work in this consciousness of me, then try to act giving up the results of your work. And Prabhupada says here in this purport, it may be that one is unable even to sympathize with the activities of Krishna consciousness because of social, familiar, or religious considerations, or because of some other impediments. If one attaches himself directly to the activities of Krishna consciousness, there may be objections from family members or so many other difficulties. For one who has such a problem, it is advised that he sacrifice the accumulated result of his activities to some good cause. Thus one may be gradually elevated to the state of knowledge. It is also found that when one who is not even interested in the activities of Krishna consciousness gives charity to some hospital or some other social institution, he gives up the hard-earned results of his activities. That is also recommended here. Because by the practice of giving up the fruits of one's activities, one is sure to purify his mind gradually. And in that purified stage of mind, one becomes able to understand Krishna consciousness. So what does giving in charity do for a person? What does Prabhupada says it does? Purifies your mind, which then allows you to take up Krishna consciousness. So if you say, I can't take up Krishna consciousness, do we meet people who say, I can't take up Krishna consciousness? My family will object this way. Can you do some work for Krishna? I just like my when I joined the Hare Krishna movement, my father became very interested. He actually became, the day I got second initiation from Prabhupada, my father handed Srila Prabhupada a check for life membership. And Prabhupada said, good father, good daughter. And my father was practicing Krishna consciousness to some extent. He was following the four principles. He had a picture of the deities. He was buying flowers for them. He tried to chant like one round a day. He'd come once a week to the Bhagavatam class. And then he remarried. And his second wife, for the first 2 years, was somewhat favorable. But as she gradually understood that Krishna consciousness meant giving up sense gratification, she became extremely antagonistic. And it got to the point that if my father wanted to give a donation, he had to do it in cash without her knowledge. You know, I would get reports sometimes that, oh, your father visited the temple and, you know, handed us a $100 bill and said, don't tell my wife if she comes. But gradually that decreased to the point that if he wanted a happy family life, he wasn't really able to do much anymore. I remember at one point she said, don't talk to your father about Krishna. He doesn't like Krishna. He just likes you. And then my father took me aside and said, you know I like Krishna, don't you? I said, yes, I know I do like Krishna. So sometimes a person's in this circumstance where he just wasn't willing to sacrifice, especially it was already his second marriage, to sacrifice his family happiness to be overtly a devotee. So Prabhupada saying to people like that, okay, give some charity, you'll get gradually purified, and eventually you'll be able to take to Krishna consciousness. Of course, then Prabhupada says, Krishna consciousness is not dependent on any other experience, because Krishna consciousness itself can purify one's mind. So it's not that we say to people, I saw one devotee showed me this on YouTube, where some devotee was preaching that if you're not vegetarian, free from illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, don't chant Hare Krishna. So Prabhupada's saying, no, that's not correct. It's not that first you have to give charity and be purified and be a pious person and then you can take to Krishna consciousness. We don't have a sign at the door, unpurified people, stay out. He says, because Krishna consciousness itself can purify one's mind, but if there are impediments to accepting Krishna consciousness, man may try to give up the results of his actions. In that respect, social service, community service, national service, and sacrifice to one's country, etc., may be accepted, so that one day one may come to the stage of pure devotional service. If one decides to sacrifice for the supreme cause, even if he does not know that the supreme cause is Krishna, he will come gradually to understand that Krishna is the supreme cause by the sacrificial method. So if someone says, I want to sacrifice for the best thing, but they don't know what the best thing is, by that process of sacrifice, they'll gradually come to understand that the best thing is Krishna. So what does it mean then when Prabhupada says humanitarian work without Krishna is nothing? Yes?
Decoration of a dead body.
But contrast that to this other purport. Temporary, okay.
Not direct.
It's not direct, yeah? Okay. The acoustics are hard when someone's back there in that area. Yes?
It doesn't remember Krishna.
It's a waste of time.
It's a waste of time. The Prabhupada said in the other purport, it can bring you to Krishna eventually. It goes away with the body. Of course, you get some good karma from it. And Prabhupada says, eventually, you'll come to Krishna consciousness that way.
It's not beneficial for the people that we're giving it to. Like, you can say that for ourselves, we might get some good karma. But the people that we're giving the philanthropy to, it's something we need to benefit beyond the body, beyond the body.
Okay, we're not benefiting others in a long-term way. Any other ideas? Yes?
It's not a given that they will eventually come to Krishna consciousness. Their mind will be more open.
Oh, okay.
But they could receive the mercy of the devotee.
Okay. So I think we're starting to get something here. That ordinary philanthropy is not definitely going to lead you to Krishna consciousness, but it prepares you such that you can. Although Prabhupada does seem to indicate that it will likely have that, it has that as a likely effect. That at some point, one would assume that might be over many, 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 many lifetimes, that at some point you'll say, wait a minute, what's actually the supreme cause for which to sacrifice? I mean, we certainly know of many demons who give in charity and it doesn't bring them to Krishna. Any other thoughts? Yes?
Just thinking that in England, people in England are very much trained to give to charity, and it's very beneficial for sanctity. Because people give money automatically.
Only in England do you think people are like that?
Mm-hmm.
No, not the rest of the world.
Sorry?
Was there some implication there that people other than the British are not so inclined to charity?
Maybe
a little
British
bit. Yeah.
A bit more easy.
It's quite simple.
Americans give in charity.
Americans tip.
Yeah, Americans give in charity. We always took advantage of that, especially at Christmas time. That people are very trained that at Christmas time you're supposed to give in charity. So even yours truly had a number of Christmases dressed up as Santa Claus on the streets of New York. I don't know if I'm going to do that again, but anyway. I did that at least two Christmases, maybe three. So people are trained to give in charity, which is one of the reasons that devotees often present what people are giving money for as something more akin to charity. Whether that's good or not is another discussion, which I'm not going to have. But we play into that tendency. I think in a lot of Southeast Asia, people are also very highly trained to give in charity. Thailand, Cambodia. And certainly the Muslims, that's one of the five pillars of Islam, is charity. Although we have a little bit harder time capitalizing that because we have a harder time just going into Muslim areas and preaching in the first place. Well, this was interesting. I mean, the way I personally think of it is something like a building. That this, if we just build this building, the benefit is somewhere close to zero. But if we put Krishna in the building, then we get great benefit. You know, or if you got, like Maitreya was out in the back of my unit plowing the ground for a long time, right? Preparing the ground. But if you don't plant anything in it, it's not really very valuable. Now, it's hard to plant things directly in grass. If you just have grass and you say, now I'm going to plant some strawberries, they probably won't grow very well. Have you ever tried that? You ever tried like planting a flower or something right just in the middle of the lawn without preparing the ground? So it's possible. It's possible. But when you've prepared the ground, then it's easier. And therefore, Krishna says in the seventh chapter that those who have not performed sins in this life, who are sinless in this life and in previous life, has an easier time of taking to Krishna consciousness. And then also Prabhupada talks about lighting a fire. He says you can't light a fire very well with wet wood. What do you get when you light a fire with wet wood? Smoke. Right? At first, basically, before the fire can really give much heat, it's got to dry the wood. So when one takes directly to Krishna consciousness from sinful life, usually the first effect is this drying out of the wood, this drying out of the anartas and the aparadas before one starts to really taste Krishna consciousness. So we see here that philanthropy, there's two sides here to philanthropy. One is that Krishna is encouraging it, and Prabhupada is encouraging it for people who refuse, for whatever reason, to take directly to Krishna consciousness. That's not inconsequential. So we are advocating, Sri Prabhupada was talking yesterday about Varnashram, we are advocating a sane society. Not that every single person in the world is going to be able to take second initiation and follow the Brahminical principles that we're teaching. Is that, can we envision that? That the whole world would be following the four regulative principles at a high standard? I don't think so. But we can have a society where people are at least open and where Krishna conscious yajna is taking place, especially if it was being done by governments, then people's tax money would also be purifying them. So we're certainly advocating that people in general be charitable and selfless. We don't say, well, if you can't take to Krishna consciousness, then just go be a drug dealer. It doesn't matter. It's all zero anyway. It's all meaningless anyway. We say, no, try to sacrifice something. At least that's Krishna's instruction. And the other instruction here is, Prabhupada's not saying don't do any humanitarian work. He's saying do humanitarian work with Krishna as the center. And how many of you have been to Bhaktivedanta Hospital in Chaupati? That's a very good example. Actually, the devotees there started that. They were doctors and they were working outside and they didn't really want to work just with non-devotees anymore. They said, you know, there's so many of us who are both devotees and doctors. And that was because the brahmacharis used to go into the colleges and universities to preach. And one of the places they went was the medical college. So a lot of the medical students became devotees. And they said, we want to practice with other devotees in a devotional atmosphere where they're serving prasadam. And they're, so they got together and they started a clinic and eventually it became a whole hospital. And you go in that hospital and there's Srila Prabhupada right in the entranceway. And even not only have many of the patients taken up Krishna consciousness, but many of the non-devotee doctors and nurses ended up becoming devotees. They would say some prayers every morning, and they have two channels you can listen to. One is Prabhupada's lectures, and one is Prabhupada's kirtan, and it's going 24 hours a day. And then they have a little rathiyatra, not just rathiyatra, once a year, rathiyatra once a day. And they have Jagannath Deep, he's in their temple, and they take them on this rath cart, to every patient's room. So that is certainly not zero. And that kind of humanitarian work where Krishna is at the center, where really it's bhakti, then there's no difference between that and bhakti. So sometimes devotees think that Prabhupada didn't want us to be nice to other people, that that didn't have any value. So obviously that is not the case. All right. That was sort of a side point, but an important one. So the body is just fit for dogs and jackals to eat. Radhanath Maharaj, telling the story of his journey to become Prabhupada's disciple, talks about how he was in Vrindavan. Well, I'll back up a little bit. He had met up with a friend of his in the Himalayas, which is, that in itself is an incredible story. And he said, okay, let's go to such and such place. I forget what place it was. So they would travel third class on the train, which meant you didn't pay a ticket. You literally jumped in the train windows before the train pulled into the station and got a seat that way. And it's rather crowded in the third class compartment. So at a certain point, when the train stopped at a station, it wasn't their destination yet. And they said, well, why don't we get out and get a breath of fresh air? And we'll jump back on the train again as it goes out. And they got out, but the station was so crowded, they couldn't get back on the train again. The train left. Where are we? Oh, you're in Mathura. Ah. And today is Krishna's birthday, Janmashtami. So they ended up in Mathura on Janmashtami. So they're going around the area, and after about a day, Radhanath Maharaj's friend said, I don't like it here so much. I liked it better in the Himalayas. I think I'll leave. And Radhanath said, well, I think I'd like to stay. He said, I'll tell you what, I'll stay a few days, and in 5 days I'll meet you back in the Himalayas in such and such town. So his friend left. So after, like 3 days, 4 days, it was time to get back on the train to see his friend, and Radhanath Maharaj decided, I really like it here. I don't want to leave. And he had no way to communicate with his friend. You know, there were no cell phones in those days. And anyway, Radhanath Maharaj didn't have a rupee with to speak of cell phone. So he's thinking, what am I going to do? I gave my word to my friend that I would meet him in 5 days at this place. I have to keep my word, but I don't want to leave Vrindavan. So he starts praying, Krishna, whatever you want to do with me. I don't know what to do. I want to stay here, but I don't know how to stay here. Just do with me whatever you want. And then he started getting a very bad fever. And he's lying on the sand by the bank of the Yamuna. That's where he would sleep every night. Just sleep on the sand. He talked about with the sky for his blanket. I don't know what he did in the rainy season. But he starts getting this horrible fever. And he gets so sick. And no one's there to take care of him. He's alone. He's lying on the bank of the Yamuna. Maybe it was a few days. Anyway, he got very sick, very fast. And he looks up, and guess what he sees? In the sky. What do you think he sees? Vultures. Circling his body. And one of them comes down and lands next to him and starts pecking at him. At which point he was rescued and taken to a hospital where they told him he had typhoid and that he couldn't go anywhere for a few months. So that was how he stayed in Vrindavan. So that's what this body is destined for. Eh? Vultures. What is this body really? And Krishna explains that we get this body, the senses, grouped around the mind. That based on our desires, we get a particular body. There's a hellish planet where you swim in a river of nails and skin and blood and pus and hair, and we go, ooh, bleh. But we're doing that right now. And this particular bag, you think pretty much everything that comes out of the body is disgusting. I mean, even the things we really like our hair, especially we ladies, we like our hair. If you just have some hair lying around, it's disgusting. Do you decorate your floor with hair? When you see hair on your pillow, is it nice in the shower? It's hair. Do you like it? You know, or our eyes? You think, oh, it's so nice. You take out your eyeballs. And those are the nice parts of our body. Why do you speak of the not very nice things of our body? What comes out of our body? Blood, mucus, saliva. Of course, if it's our body, we think it's very nice. You know, if you're staying in an ashram, we have to share the sink with somebody, and they're brushing their teeth, and they get some of their toothpaste full of saliva on your hand, you're like, but if you get some of your toothpaste saliva on your hand, you know, you don't think much of it. So it's not a very nice body. Now, if this body is a manifestation of our desires, if this body is a gross manifestation of our desires, what does that tell us about the nature of our desires? Yes. And what's the essence of our of material desire? Me. Hey, right? Someone shows you a photograph you look for. Where is me? The essence is I want to be Krishna. I want to be the center. I want to be the Lord. How stinky and nasty that desire is. That's the root. Why does he get to be the Lord? Why does he get to make the decisions? Why does he get to be the enjoyer? As one devotee said in London, why does he get to have all the gopis? Can I have one? He said when he first read Krishna's book, that was how he thought. So this desire, it stinks. When this desire manifests, it manifests as a bunch of blood and pus and stool and mucus. Now, to take this glob that we're in, which by the very wonderful potency of Maya is covered with a little bit of skin and we think, oh, it's very nice, to take that and use it, as Dadichi is saying here, to use it to continue selfishness is not intelligent. It was selfishness, self-centeredness, that got me this body in the first place. And not only is it disgusting, it's full of so much pain. Bhakti Chumars likes to give the example, you take your little finger, how much pleasure can you get from your little finger? You can use it to type, you could, I guess you can massage it, you can make it nice and warm, I mean, there's a limit to how much pleasure can give, but if you want to give pain to the finger, you could think of gazillion ways. You know, you just slam it against a door or something, and it's you can't even think about anything else for a week. Or just one little tiny bit. It's such a source of pain and misery and revulsion. But it's the manifestation of selfishness. Therefore, don't use the body to continue on with selfishness. If you do, then you'll just get another body, and another body, and another body, and another body. Use it for para upakara. Reverse. Why is there any benefit in charity? Because it starts getting people to give instead of to take, to start seeing that I am a servant. We talk about the essential dharma is to serve. To serve also means to give. So as soon as one starts to give, then you start knocking at this root of selfishness. And even materially speaking, giving is more pleasing than taking. From a logical point of view, it doesn't make any sense. If I have $100 and I spend it to buy you a present instead of to buy me a present, why do I often feel happier? I mean, unless you don't appreciate it. If I spend my time cooking for you instead of cooking for me, why do I feel happier? Why does giving get me something? Why does it give me any happiness at all? You can't really explain this by material logic. You can't explain this by Darwinian evolution. By Darwinian evolution, that shouldn't make any sense. There shouldn't be any benefit or happiness in giving, especially giving to a member of another species or to a member of your species that's less fortunate than you. We should want all those people to be eliminated, right? So we can evolve higher. Why do we feel good when we help somebody? Because we're starting to move towards truth. The truth is, my dharma is to give. Only. My dharma is not to take. My dharma is just to give, to give, to give, to give. And if I give to the right source, if I give to Krishna, then as soon as I give to Krishna, because I'm part of Krishna, then I'm also full. Even some perversion of that is pleasing. Even just giving to another jiva in a materialistic way is pleasing. What to speak of giving to Krishna. So therefore, Krishna says, I create, maintain, and destroy the world by penance only. It's one of the chatur sloks of the Bhagavatam. Yagnartar karmano natra lokoyam karma bandhana tadartam kama kantaya mukta sangha samachara. Everything should be done as sacrifice for Vishnu, but everything should be done as sacrifice. Krishna says, without sacrifice, you can't be happy in this world or the next. So to use the body, and what do we mean by the body? Pranayar, atar, diya, vacha. Our life itself, given sacrifice. Our wealth, given sacrifice. Our intelligence, given sacrifice. Our speaking, given sacrifice. Whatever we have, given sacrifice. Then we will cut the chains that brought us to this body and brought us to material illusion. Actually, the great devotees, they're not so concerned if they're in a body or not, but they don't want to have a selfish mentality. And factually, when you give up a selfish mentality and you give to Krishna, then it doesn't matter whether you're in a body or not. You no longer experience the body as distressful or painful, Prabhupada says in 1422. He doesn't desire to stay in the body, and he doesn't desire to get out of the body. It doesn't matter. And if we're going to give as a cure for our problem, then the best place is to give to Krishna and to the devotees. And to give all living entities, because ultimately all living entities are Krishna's devotees. Jivara Swarupaya Krishnara Nityadasha. And what is the best gift we can give for everybody? To again teach them how to give to Krishna. To pull them into the circle of giving and of sacrifice. And that is the best use of this body. And if the body is used like that, then we see, Bhumarapanalovayu, that it's all Krishna's energy. We see, actually, it's Krishna. And everything becomes Vaikuntha. Instead of being in a feeling I'm in a hellish planet swimming in this river of blood and nails, I feel I'm in Vaikuntha. Here's Krishna. Therefore, as Prabhupada says in Krishna book, in regard to the prayers of Lord Brahma, said, Maya exists within the mind. It is a question of whether I am self-centered or Krishna-centered. Came in here the other afternoon, and there was a lecture of Prabhupada playing, and he said, the only difference is, am I doing it for me or am I doing it for Krishna? The external activities, he said, of course, you cannot do nonsense and do it for Krishna. You cannot run a liquor store for Krishna. Few things. You can't sell meat for Krishna, run a liquor store for Krishna, run a brothel for Krishna, run a casino for Krishna. Few things. But basically, whatever you can do, just do it for Krishna. So simple. So simple. And then even in this body, even in this world, there becomes no difference. Krishna is also here. And one becomes then in Vaikuntha. In any situation. This body, which is eatable by jackals and dogs after death, does not actually do any good for me, the spirit soul. It is usable only for a short time and may perish at any moment. The body and its possessions, its riches and relatives must all be engaged for the benefit of others, or else they will become sources of tribulation and misery. So, thank you. I hope you enjoyed Bhaktivinoda Thakur's song. Comments, questions? Yes.
When you were talking about how Christopher had
Yes, you don't mind if your child spits on your hand.
Yeah, and for a mother to check to make sure their own child's not common, but if they're looking after someone else's baby.
Yes, right.
It's a whole different
thing. Exactly right. Yes, I read an article once about fatherhood. This man was talking about fatherhood, and he was saying how much he loved being a father, how he hadn't anticipated how much he would love it. And he said, even you'll take the food that your child has chewed out of their mouth and eat it. That's what the devotees do with Krishna. Yes.
I have a question.
Yes.
How to understand the class that you just gave in relation to the story of Prabhupada where he's walking on Jogu Beach and he asked the devotees something like if someone was drowning out there, how should we respond? And I can't remember the exact details of it, but the idea was that actually we don't go and try and save him. Because it's just a material benefit, and we're getting tied up in that karma. Then Prabhupada says, but because people would misjudge, they'll say the bodies are hard-hearted, therefore we should go and try to help.
I'd say Prabhupada was speaking from the point of view of an Uttama Adhikari.
That there is soul anyway.
That everything's happening by Krishna's direction, everything's exactly perfectly as it is, and I have no need to interfere in anything ever, even for preaching. What to speak of for saving drowning people? The Uttama Adhikari doesn't even preach. They see everything's going on exactly as it's supposed to go. Well, I don't need to do anything, unless Krishna specifically asked me to do something. So that's a particular mood. Which Prabhupada says in the Isha Upanishad should not be imitated. But you find stories of devotees like that. Of course, he's an incarnation on devotee, but Rishabhdev did that. He's just wandering without, he didn't involve himself in anything around him. Or Jed Bharata in his third life also. He kept to himself. He didn't even practically talk to anybody. Acted like he was just dumb. Maharaj Yudhisthira did that at the end of his life. Just separated themselves from society and didn't have any interaction with the world in any way. They were absorbed in their internal meditation and but that's more like an avadhuta. That's not in general. It's not an instruction in general. That's how I understand it. I'm sure it could be understood in different ways also. And there's also times when Prabhupada gave different instructions. It's times that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati chastises the grihastha devotees for not giving in charity to poor people. So there's another thing about those sort of instructions in conversations and letters, particularly that are done to certain persons, is that they may be in response to a particular person's mentality. I'm thinking of, there's so many places where Srila Prabhupada will say, chanting Hare Krishna means to think about Krishna. That if you're chanting Hare Krishna, naturally you immediately remember the form of the deity, you remember the conversations in Bhagavad Gita, you remember Krishna's pastimes. But then there's one conversation where a devotee says, Prabhupada, what do I do with my mind when I'm chanting? Prabhupada said, there's no question of mind, you just chant in here. And I was thinking about that when we were driving back from the loft, Radhakiranka, you were there, and you, and there was that other gentleman in the car, and he was asking all these, do you remember the questions he was asking? And he was asking these quasi-philosophical, cosmological questions, which was very obvious by the questions he was asking that he didn't have even the most basic understanding of Krishna consciousness. I mean, not even nothing. He was just beginning. He liked Krishna consciousness. He likes to chant. But if you said to that gentleman, you should think about Krishna, Lord knows what he would think about. I mean, seriously, he might think about the rings of Saturn or something. You know, he was, right? You remember that? So, my understanding is if a person came to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, what do I do with my mind when I'm chanting? Prabhupada could understand that this person didn't just automatically think of the deities. He said, just here. I was thinking that would be an appropriate instruction for that man. If he said, what should I do with my mind when I'm chanting? I'd say, just hear the mantra. But I wouldn't say that to somebody. I'd say, you know, what Prabhupada said. He said, you're seeing the deity. Can't you think of the deity when you're chanting? So sometimes we also have to be careful what a particular person's attachments are, what their preconceptions are, where they're coming from, and that instructions given, sometimes that's even true for public lectures. If you have a homogeneous audience, and sometimes when you're giving a public lecture, you're gearing it to a particular audience. Just like for maybe, it was at least three times, maybe five times, I was asked, one of the highlights of my life, to give a class on Krishna consciousness to Christian ministers. Southern Christian Baptist ministers, if any of you know what that means. And their professor was very favorable, is, if he's still living, very favorable to the movement. He, did he write a whole book about Krishna consciousness or a section? Anyway, what he wrote was just wonderful. It practically sounds like it's written by a devotee. Very, very favorable. Wonderful gentleman. And he would bring his world religion classes every year, or new religion classes, to the temple. And these were graduate students. They were master's degree students. They were all already ordained ministers. Many of them already, as they say, had a church. They were preaching to dozens or hundreds or thousands of people. Some of them were planning on being missionaries, and some of them were planning on being missionaries in India. So when I would give that class to them, I felt like every person in that room represented hundreds or even tens of thousands of people in terms of how they would present Krishna consciousness. But I did not present Krishna consciousness to them in the same way that I would at an Auckland Sunday feast. I mean, I quoted a lot from the Bible, for example. There were certain things that I really didn't spend a whole lot of time on, like deity worship. So one has to understand, even in the Shastra, one looks at this purport that we read today in relationship to this verse, and then there's the purport to 12, what I think is 11, which is in relationship to another verse. So I see that that's there also, that how is the acharya or the devotee preaching to a particular devotee, or how are they preaching to a particular audience, or what is the particular context? And I think the final thing I'd say about that is that a conditioned soul would probably interpret that kind of behavior, that when we don't get involved with saving a drowning man, how they would interpret and live that in their life would be hard-heartedness. That it wouldn't, for most people, it wouldn't translate into the kind of behavior that we'd like to see for devotees, which we see in general about preaching on about detachment. That many people, filter. They hear about detachment, and it goes through their modal filter, and it translates into hard-heartedness, which is a very different thing from detachment. So that's a long answer.
Thank you. I've been thinking about that story for many, many years, and trying to resolve it because I had problems.
I'm sure there's not only one answer, and I'm sure that many other people could give many other answers that would also be equally, if not far, better. You know, but you see, I'm thinking about a story. I remember Hari Sarya Shudhakirti tells it, how there was this little bug in Prabhupada's room. And Prabhupada was feeling very sorry that the bug didn't have any food in the room. And he said to his servant, please take this bug outside where it can get something to eat. What to speak of a drowning person. And Prabhupada would see the people foraging in the garbage in my room. And a devotee said, you know, sometimes I feel bad. Prabhupada said, sometimes? He said, no one should go hungry within 10 miles or 10 kilometers of our temples. And this whole humanitarian thing is quite a debate. Because there's a number of places where Prabhupada will say, don't just target poor people. Give prasadam to everybody. And then there's other places where he would be praising the activities of devotees who were going and giving food relief to poor people. And he was saying, this is preaching Krishna consciousness, and it will also really endear us to the local government and the local people, and it will help our mission. So, you know, you have some people who will take some of the quotes and say, you know, this food for life ISKCON does to the poor people is a compromise. It's watering down the process. It's bringing us to another, to the modes of nature and blah, blah, blah. And then you have other people who pull out the other quotes and say, but Prabhupada also wanted that. So I see that Prabhupada's responding in different circumstances and with different people. Or the same person at different times. There's that story of the devotee who was overweight. And Prabhupada said, you shouldn't eat so much. He said, but Prabhupada, when I joined the movement, you told me to keep eating up to my neck. And Prabhupada said, did you believe me then? So believe me now. So, you know, you were talking yesterday about different dharma for different varnas and ashrams. So generally we have one varna our whole life, but our ashram changes. So what's appropriate instruction for someone in the brahmacharya? You were bringing this up yesterday. So they may be talking to the same person. So the guru may be talking to Krishnadas. Same guru, same Krishnadas. And when Krishnadas is, 16 in the brahmacharya ashram, he says, gives him one instruction. And when he's 26 in the grihastha ashram, he gives him an opposite instruction. 16 in the brahmacharya ashram, he says, don't keep any of your own personal money. Turn it all over to the ashram. And at 26, he may say, why aren't you saving any money? Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Vasudev Dutt, or Vasudev Ghosh, Vasudev somebody. He was Vasudev Dutt. So opposite instructions to the same person. Hope I didn't just add to the confusion. When you first come to Krishna consciousness, you kind of think everything's very simple. But my conclusion is we're dealing with a person, and persons are not simple. Persons are complex. We say God is a person, that means he's complex. That means he responds, he responds differently to different devotees, he responds differently in different circumstances, he makes different arrangements for different people, he tells one person, you should marry another person, you should never marry one person, you should serve the Ganga, one person, you should serve the devotees. Different things at different times, different places. He has different moods. What pleases him one day may not please him another day, depending on the circumstance and the mentality and the person. It's not because Vidura could please Krishna with banana peels that we're just going to start offering banana peels on the altar. So there's... Is that all right? Anything else? Yes, please. Yes. A woman who wanted to adopt a child?
Give up the child for adoption so that she can be the English.
Give up the, oh yes, right. Some devotees what? Well, no, I don't know exactly what Prabhupada meant. But, I mean, one can get a reasonable understanding that somebody who wants to give away their child to worship the deity needs to have some strong correction. They had some strong misunderstanding. I'm thinking of Lakshmimoni, who wrote Prabhupada, what do I do about taking care of my child and doing deity worship? And Prabhupada said, don't neglect one thing at the expense of another. He told her to use some common sense. And he said, you should always take care of your child, just like the woman never neglects her bunch of hair. You should never neglect your child. So, when my oldest child was a baby, before I entered in the grihastha ashram, I was a full-time book distributor. And then during the pregnancy, I had a time when I wasn't feeling very well and it was a little hard to distribute books. Then after my baby was born, I really couldn't figure out how to go out in book distribution anymore. And there were different camps. There was one camp that said to me, you should just leave your kid alone in the house and go out and do books. Really, literally. Just lock him up alone in the house and go out and distribute books. And then I had another camp who said, oh, no, your dharma is to be a wife and a mother and you're not allowed to distribute books. So I had those, most of the people were telling me to leave my kid and distribute books. That was sort of the mood at the time. And, yeah. So by Krishna's grace, I had a very sober husband who just said, look, your duty is to take care of the child. Don't be crazy one way or the other. But when I got second initiation, I was very distraught about this, especially because the Bhagavatam classes at those times were all book distribution, book distribution, book distribution, book distribution. Grahastas are dogs. I was really like that. And there was 250 devotees in the temple, and there were only two grahasta families with children. So I was like, well, who are you talking to? It was pretty intense. I used to come home crying after Bhagavatam class almost every day. I was like, I'm so full. They'd say that the gopis became Goswamis who went out on book distribution. So if you want to be a gopi, you go out on book distribution, and if you stay back and worship the deity, you'll become a rock and all this. So when I got second initiation, I asked Prabhupada. So my son was maybe 7 months old at the time. I said, Prabhupada, I want to please you and I want to preach, but I have a child, I don't know what to do. And he answered me, it was just like, the feeling I got was he was saying, what a stupid question this is. Prabhupada said, you must take care so you may not go out. I'm like, duh. Actually, the next week we started going out once a week because my husband had a job. We started going out on Sundays, distributing back to Godheads. And I put the baby on my back in a backpack. We ran into my husband's boss then. That was another story. But Prabhupada, you know, he's tailoring his answers to what the person needs and their particular circumstances and understanding their particular mentality. And I'm thinking about Lord Kapiladev, who says that if you worship the Lord and don't nicely treat other living entities, it's like making an offering into ashes. Or Jesus, who says, if you brought your offering to the altar, but you have some quarrel with your brother, put down your offering, go fix the quarrel with your brother, and then come back and make your offering. Is that okay? All right. So the body is just a lump of ignorance, eatable for vultures, the result of our selfishness. So if we use it still to propound selfishness, then we simply entangle us further. Therefore, we should use it for sacrifice, and the best object of sacrifice is the Supreme Lord. And I'd like to invite all of you on Saturday, July 25th. I put a notice up by the prasadam room door. From 7 in the morning until 7:30 at night, we are going to have a Leela and Kirtan festival. But we're with Sri Prahlad and Sridham and Divya Govinda and Rohita and who else? Who's our kirtan? And me? And who was the other kirtan? Did I miss one? I got everybody? Okay. So we're going to start at 7, and we're going to have kirtan, then Leela, then kirtan, then Leela, some prasadam here and there. Sri Prahlad and I have forgotten all about the prasadam. Thankfully, Kalas reminded us that we have to have brings for prasadam. And we're not going to be just reading. We're going to have dramatic storytelling, basically. And we're going to be pulling from Krishna book, the BBT's 10th canto, the Acharya's commentaries on the 10th canto, Bihad Bhagavatamrita, Nanda Vrindavan Champu, probably Bhaktivinoda Thakur's books where he talks about the demons representing different anartas and a whole slew of various shastras. So that's what we were thinking. You know, all these other places have their 24-hour kirtan and their this and that. So we wanted to put Auckland on the map. Anyway, so that'll be Saturday the 25th from 7 in the morning until 7:30 at night. So I hope you can come.
What's the venue?
Here. And bring some friends, acquaintances, whatever. Okay? Thank you very much. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.